This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
Tech giant Google fires someone for having an unpopular opinion. We tell you the details on Tactics. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Tactics. I am Caleb Colquitt here for News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in at any point during this morning. Yes, we have this issue with Google. Has fired an employee. I'm going to get to the details, but before I go anywhere, I want to say this, want to get this out of the way so there is no misunderstanding. I am being intellectually consistent, and by that I mean, when I say what I'm going to say about Google, I am speaking about the wisdom of their decision, not its legality. I have always maintained that a private company can fire anybody for any reason if they want to. They can fire this guy for having a difference of opinion. They can fire this guy because they didn't like the color of his shirt. They could fire a Christian if they wanted to for being a Christian. As outrageous as that would be, legally, they're allowed to do it if that's what they want to do. I've always maintained that, always believed that that is the way private industry should work. So everything that I say from here on out for the rest of this program, if I ever bring it up again, I am speaking about whether or not this was a good decision, whether or not this was a profitable business decision, all of those factors, I am not commenting on the legality because, to me, the legality is not in dispute. The legality has been settled. Yes, Google has the right to fire this guy if they want to. So that's not what we're discussing here. Everything that I'm going to bring forward is discussing specifically whether or not this was a good idea for Google to do it. All right, so now that we got that out of the way, there's this guy that has been fired from Google for essentially having an opinion that differs from the diversity manager. And yes, in case you're wondering, Google has a diversity, I forget the official title, but it's like diversity supervisor or something like that. They have a guy that's actually assigned to just, I guess he's a part of the human resources department, to just look at how diverse the staff is. And this guy, who, by the way, incredible credentials, really impressive resume, even though he's only 28 years old, multiple degrees from several top-tier universities. He actually was on track to get his PhD from Harvard. Google offered him a job. It was so tempting that he couldn't refuse. So he actually, the guy literally stopped his education to go work for Google. That's how important this was to him. He's been there for a little while now. And he gave up finishing his doctorate at Harvard just because he really wanted to go work for Google. And he was near the top in all of his classes, really high marks, worked on several big projects and research teams. The guy's degree, actually, you would think, oh, big tech company. He's a computer engineer. Actually, most of his degrees are in biology. He's got a couple degrees in a couple different areas of biology. So super, super intelligent guy. Anyway, to give you the story and the background on this, Google has gone to their employees, this diversity supervisor, and he asked for input on how we can become more diverse. So they went out to all their employees as a whole, not to this guy specifically, but all their employees. They said, look, we're trying to get more diverse. We've got some issues, like 70% of our staff is men. We're looking at ways to become more diverse, to employ more women, more minorities. And so we want to get your take, your opinion on how we can become more diverse as a company. And they sent that out to everybody. This guy reads over it, considers it, sends back a 10-page memo outlining diversity of thought issues. Now, if you want to take a look at this memo. If you want to take a look at this memo, you can go online, search for it. Believe me, it'll be one of the first things that pops up. If you see a news story talking about it, most of them have done what good news story should have done, which is give you the link to the actual memo, the full 10-page memo. So get it if you get a chance, go ahead and read that. So looking at this 10-page memo, he was essentially saying, he went into a lot of detail and is very articulate, very well reasoned. It's something that you would expect somebody with his level of education to come out with. It was, you could tell it was thoughtful, that he had put a lot of time into it, that kind of thing. And his major point is that we're not really diverse in thought. So what we've done is we've created essentially a tiny little echo chamber where our entire company tends to think one way, and you're discouraging people from thinking a different way if their beliefs are unpopular. Which is ironic, considering for saying that he got fired for having a difference of opinion. But that was sort of the main thrust of what he was saying. And he also went into, because they were asking specifically about diversity, he was saying that it seems as though in this company there's no room for any sort of conservative thought, conservative reasoning. And he also pointed out that a lot of our programs that deal with things that we would call affirmative action are really not helping improve our diversity. They're not helping us to hire more women, not helping us to hire. And he's saying, so let's take a look at this. And this is what was impressive to me, because you could almost understand them getting really upset. I don't know if it would, in my mind, elevate you to the point of getting fired. You could understand them getting upset if this guy was saying, see, this company's terrible. It's awful. We're not doing the things that we're supposed to do. And there's really no point in all this. That's not what he said. You read that memo, he came at it from an angle of, these are the things I think that the company could improve on. And it wasn't just him ranting and talking about how horrible Google was. He likes working there. He's talked about that several times in the memo. He said, these are some improvements I think we can make. So this wasn't a guy just railing against the management. He actually had some really thoughtful, well-reasoned solutions. He went after some of their segregated education programs and affirmative action programs. This was something that I thought made a lot of sense, because there are actually programs within Google that, because they're trying to quote unquote increase their diversity, what they'll do is you are allowed to take some of these courses, work training programs, if you're a minority or if you're a woman, but not if you're a white guy, which is quite literally discrimination. I don't know any other way you can put it. You're not allowed to be in this program that might help you advance in your job because you're a white man. And so one of the things he brought up is, he said, why don't we quit worrying about that and start worrying about diversity of thought issues, whether or not we have people of differing opinions, because making a campus at our workplace that's academically rigorous would do more to benefit us. And he actually suggested what I thought was a really clever strategy to get women into higher paying jobs that I really didn't even think about. And so this guy's not against women or anything like that. His strategy was, because men tend to want the prestige, because men are wired that way. He pointed out that there's several differences in men and women, a little bit of what we were talking about yesterday. He said that because typically men want that prestige, they want the job that people look at and say, okay, that guy's really moving and shaking, he's making a difference here. He said those are the jobs that usually pay more as well. And he said, so if we want to get women in higher paying jobs, quote unquote, close the wage gap, as it were, the best way to do that would be to start paying more for jobs that are not seen as prestigious, and maybe look at some of those programs, because as a general rule, he didn't say in every case, but he said as a general rule, women tend to not look at whether or not a job is prestigious. They don't tend to look at pay quite as much as men do. They really want jobs that allow them more flexibility when it comes to hours, when it comes to leave, that kind of thing, because they're concerned about their families, which is fine. He's just saying as a general rule, that tends to be a trend in our company, and so we should probably adjust for that. And he said, essentially, that because women are different and they have different needs, they look for jobs in a different way than men do. And if we really want to do something about the fact that so much of our staff is composed of guys, maybe we should start looking at that. Maybe we could look at ways. And he offered a couple of real world solutions that I thought were really clever. I honestly wouldn't have come up with these. So he wasn't just railing against the problem. He wasn't just saying that we're horrible and we need to change and management is a pain to work with or anything like that. Everything that he said, he came at it from an angle of, here's some steps that I think we may be able to take to increase our diversity. And what's unfortunate is it seems as though now that this idea that men and women are different and because of that they look for different things when they're looking for work, that this is the issue, that even having that opinion is so problematic for them that they've got to look at terminating you as a result of it. So let's look at this guy, who he is, his background. Based on all this, he's got to be some kind of hard right, maybe alt-right, neo-Nazi type, right? Actually, no. Politically, he identifies as what would be known as a classic liberal. Those are his words, not mine. He talks about that at the end of the memo. And this is something, actually, that I don't use often because it confuses people. But if you're looking at what classic liberalism means, that would actually be me. A classic liberal, if you're using what liberal used to mean, it was actually somebody that railed against the establishment in Europe when there was a monarchy. So a classical liberal, not like a liberal today that we think of in America, a classic liberal is somebody that believes in small government and personal freedom and responsibility. So if you're looking at that, even I would fit into that category. So this guy, they were talking about him being racist and sexist and all this stuff. There's really no evidence from that, from the memo, no evidence that anyone's been able to provide from his work history. Apparently this guy, they've never had an issue with his work up until this point. So it really bothers me that they're doing this to him. Google's essentially becoming the thought police. All right, we've got an interview with Scott Tribble, manager of the Biscuits, coming up. 860-1440. We'll be right back. Together walking. It's just knowing that the world will not be cursing or forgiving when I walk along some railroad track. And
this is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Okay, I'm introducing myself. All right. Glad to be back with each and every one of you this morning. We do have Biscuits General Manager Scott in with us today. So, Scott, tell us what's going on down at Riverwalk.
Oh, everything and anything. We got a full, fun weekend of baseball coming up against the Jackson Generals. Team is playing well. We're in the playoffs as of right now, so we're looking to continue to get some wins. Starting off tomorrow night, Thursday, with Sock Hop Nights. We're going back to the 50s. Drive-in diners, roller skates, greaser jackets, American graffiti. Oh, we're going to have so much fun tomorrow night. Hand-spun root beer floats, cream soda. It's going to be a lot of fun with some photo booths and music and everything you can think of from the 50s and Enchantment Under the Sea dances and whatever else we can come up with in the next 24 hours.
See, that's one of the things that I was actually going to ask about. You've got to have some kind of soda fountain callback if you're going to do a 50s theme. So it sounds like y'all are on top of it with the root beer floats.
Yeah, the entire club car bar we're going to try to turn into a 50s diner. We got an inflatable jukebox. We're going to be playing good music down there. Literally hand-scooped ice cream, root beer floats. We got cream sodas down there. That should be an interesting night. It was actually one of our most requested theme nights from our fans, so we're excited to put it on and see how it turns out.
Okay, well, what's going on Friday?
Friday, we got our charities night, so we're going to be hopefully giving back a lot of money to the River Region. We've got a jersey auction, so you can come down, bid on a game-worn jersey, our white jerseys from the Biscuits players. All the money and proceeds from that will go back to the River Region United Way. We also have a list of charities. There's about 43 charities on our website right now that if you type in a promo code, $3 of your ticket will go back to one of those charities. So again, say River Region United Way, type in RRUW when you buy your tickets online. We're going to give $3 back to the River Region United Way. So there's a lot of fun stuff out there, a lot of ways to give back, have fun, and end the game with some Max fireworks.
I was about to say, you have two fireworks going on this weekend, right?
Back-to-back Max fireworks. So Friday and Saturday. Saturday, we're also giving away an AUM water bottle, which is a really nice kind of metal water bottle. It's a heavy duty, it's long lasting, it's a nice silver color with AUM logo and a Biscuits logo on there. So first 1,000 kids 18 and under coming through the gates are going to get a water bottle. So bring all the neighborhood kids, make sure you stock up and get as many as you can because they will go fast. And then we're also, again, got our Max Fireworks after the game. It's back to school night, so any teachers out there listening to us right now, bring your teacher ID to Saturday's game and get $5 off your ticket price.
All right. Well, you know, we've got the back to school. Y'all just finished your campaign with the school supplies donation. Yeah. Do you have any idea how that went? Have y'all been able to tally that yet?
It went great, yeah. On Saturday, we went out to That's My Child's block party, their first ever block party, and we had huge, huge boxes of pencils and notepads and paper to give away, and the kids were just excited and thrilled. We took another box over to Brantwood Children's Home. So, again, everything we got went to a really good cause, and everything turned out great. The sport was fantastic, so we're looking to keep it alive. And actually, you just reminded me, if you bring some canned goods on Friday, we're going to donate everything to the Montgomery Area Food Bank as well, and you also get a discount on your tickets with that as well. So get into the pantry, bring out any of your old soups or corn or whatever else you got, and bring them down. We'll make sure they get donated to the food banks.
You know, that's one thing I've always really liked about the biscuits. Y'all really do try to make yourselves a part of the community. And
yeah, that's what it's all about.
With all these events, I mean, charity events where you can go in, donate something, get a couple bucks off of your ticket. And I tell people this all the time. It's like, look, you're doing a good thing and you're getting to watch really high quality baseball. You can't lose in that scenario.
And Friday, Saturday, you're getting to watch Max Fireworks as well. So, again, it's hopefully it's enticing enough for you to want to come to the game, bring some canned goods and school supplies, whatever it may be. But at the same time, you know, again, we're here for our community. We're not here to, you know, win championships. We would like to, but our main goal is to grow the community, make it better, and be an important part of it.
And speaking of that, what is the situation now with a wild card playoff spot? Is that like about a biscuits two games ahead?
We are 2.5 games over Tennessee, 3 games over Jackson, and Jackson's coming to town. So it's an important series. We want to make sure we win as many as we can this week and need our support from the Montgomery faithful to come out and cheer the team on.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Scott. We always appreciate it.
I love coming on with you guys. I appreciate it.
All right. You have a good one. Thanks, Scott. So with everything that's going on in the wild card race, the way that works is we weren't the winners of the first half, but the guys that are winning the second half right now also won the first half, and, of course, they need two different teams for that. So right now we are leading. As long as we can stay in second place, we'll be doing all right. So we do have that wild card, and like Scott said, we are playing the guys that are in the running that are right behind us. So really important series, guys. Get out there, support the biscuits. They need your help this weekend, and you're going to have a lot of fun along the way. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 3:20. For our citizenship is in heaven, from which also we eagerly wait for a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers, and I did want to get back to the story that we led with this morning. Google has fired one of their employees for essentially having a difference of opinion. They went to him. This guy didn't just write a letter unsolicited. They went to their employees, ask, can you give us some ways that we might be able to increase the diversity that we have here at Google? He wrote a memo, said that some of the problems that they're having are with some of the affirmative action, the education programs that are delegated specifically to women and minorities that exclude some people that you're not even allowed in the room for. And this was what he came out with. Not listing any demands or anything like that. He just said, here's some things that I think we could improve on. And they essentially fired him for it. People in Silicon Valley are, and people on the left really in the media, are defending this, saying that this memo was hate speech, that it can't be tolerated, that they had to get rid of him because he was creating a toxic work environment. Here's the thing, though. If he was creating this toxic work environment, why is it that nobody noticed until this memo came out? If he was a real problem for minorities and women in the workplace, why is it that nobody picked up on this before? Because if you're causing issues in the workplace, regardless of what it is, people notice that before you put pen to paper.
I've been noticing or reading lately about this, as far as discrimination, that there's ageism in Silicon Valley, that a lot of the older types, even people over 40 are being systematically excluded from positions that they should be in because of age. Have you heard that?
Yes, actually, I have heard about that. That's been going on for a couple of years now. There have been people that voice concerns about that. So
there are a lot of millennials and power out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a very young group of people, and it's interesting now that we've got some of our wealthiest and most powerful people in the country in Silicon Valley, and a lot of them are, you know, floating around their 30s right now. So it is an interesting issue to run into. But when it comes to this guy, there were several people that came out. Now, guys, this name's a little out there, so you're just going to have to bear with me. Yonatan Zunger. He was a employee at Google for 14 years. He came out defending Google, saying that they really had no choice but to fire him. This is a quote directly from him. "The problem here was that this was a disrespectful disagreement. There's no respect. There's really no respectful way to say, I think you and people like you aren't as qualified to do your job as people like me." All right, so kind of addressing this. He never said that there are no women that are qualified for these higher level positions. He just said, in general, they don't seek them out the same way that men do. That's all he said. Didn't say that they were incapable of fulfilling them, didn't say that they were going to be bad at doing them. He just said that as a general rule, women don't pursue those high level positions. And you've probably noticed this in your workplace as well. Women, because they're concerned about their families, because it's part of who they are, not all women, but most women, don't pursue those high-level, high-demand jobs that are going to take 70, 80 hours out of the week. And at Silicon Valley, that's actually pretty standard for the high-paying, more prestigious jobs. There are people that literally have dormitories on their campus to where they can sleep at work and then wake up and be at work already. That's how intense a time commitment some of these jobs are. And what he's saying is because women are more concerned with their family than men, that kind of thing, not all women, but most, they tend to not seek those jobs out as much. And that's part of the reason that we don't have that. And he said, so maybe what we should do is start looking at changing the way that we present the jobs, what we expect out of that kind of thing. So that's really all that he was saying. But now they're taking that to mean that, well, you're not qualified to do the job like I'm qualified to do the job. And first of all, even though he wasn't saying that, I want to take his argument on its face value. Let's just assume that he was saying that women are less qualified, not as apt to do that. There actually are ways, not to say that, but there are ways to be respectful and still acknowledge a biological difference in a person. I don't think that he was doing that, but let's just say for the sake of argument that that is what was happening. If what would happen if, say, the NBA started a program to increase their Asian players? If they said every team's got to have at least one Asian guy as a starter in the NBA, well, that's going to be a problem because, as a general rule, not always, but most Asian men are kind of short. And
yep.
And they're not typically great at basketball. Now, we've got some great Asian pitchers, Asian baseball players. You know, they're really into soccer. There's some sports that they're excellent at. But let's be honest, when it comes to basketball, it's going to be really hard for the average Asian man to compete with the average black guy because they tend to be taller.
A lot taller.
Right. It's just a biological difference. That's not discrimination to say as a general rule. Now, you've got guys like Yao Ming who, great basketball player, happens to be Asian. That's not saying that every Asian person is unqualified to play in the NBA, because obviously he is. That's just saying usually because of
a genetic predisposition.
Because of a genetic predisposition, the average Asian person would not be good at basketball. Not to say that all aren't, but you know, as a general rule, that's the case. That is a respectful way to say, on average, they wouldn't be as qualified as maybe a person of another race. That's just acknowledging a biological difference by the law of averages, and that's all that this guy was saying here. Also, his stance was that the most qualified person should get the job regardless of any of the factors that they're looking at, whether or not the person is a minority race, whether or not the person is a man or a woman. That was his stance. Laid that out pretty clearly. If you are the most qualified person, you should get the job regardless of what other factors are determined here. And he said, and that actually may increase our diversity because it will increase diversity of thought and it will set a standard for people to be able to follow. By the way, if you're wondering, well, how on earth can that be controversial? That was actually ruled as being hate speech by two universities a couple years ago. I covered this story back when I was a podcast, before I was even at News Radio 1440. There were a couple of universities that put out memos to their employees saying that these are things that it's racist and sexist to say and will be considered hate speech and could end in you being evaluated for whether or not your position at this university remains. I forget the names of the colleges, but one of the things on there that you were not allowed to say is that the most qualified person should get the job. You were not allowed to say that at this university.
Duh.
So there are people that genuinely consider that hate speech, essentially saying that whether you're black, white, purple, blue, or orange, you get the job based on your own merit, not your skin color. They're saying that that is racist, which is odd because that would be actually the opposite of racism. That would be what Dr. Martin Luther King was saying. You are judged by the content of your character, not the color of your skin. Also had another guy, Wesley Chan, who was an early Google employee, was there when it was in its infancy. I don't think that he's there anymore, but he was talking about Google's structure and their culture. He said, it's not about free discourse. Talking about the firing of this guy, he says, it's not about free discourse. It's about advancing a fringe viewpoint, which is hurtful to a large population of the company. So essentially, the case that Chan is making here is that it is now a fringe belief and hurtful to believe that men and women are different. You believing that men and women are different and because of that they perform at work differently, not worse, just differently, because they look for different jobs and different roles within the company, and because they look for different things appeal to them when you're talking about a job, then saying that is now hurtful to a large population of the company. I guess that qualifies as a fringe belief now. And when you look at the way especially the political left is presenting this now, saying that if you don't believe that men and women are essentially just interchangeable and there's no discernible differences whatsoever, then you're the bigot. You can see where this line of thinking comes from. And this is what really concerns me about it. Google has, in essence, become the thought police. That if you have an opinion like this, even if it's never affected your work before, even if you don't have any power to implement this in any way, we can't keep you with the company. That to me is very troublesome. And like I said, Google as a private company has the right to do this if they want to. But any company that doesn't engage in something like this has a competitive advantage. Because as smart as this guy is, another company that doesn't care that this guy thinks this way will probably be able to pick him up now because he's been fired from Google at below market value and because there are other companies in Silicon Valley that won't take him specifically because of this. And they may be able to get a really good deal on him and compete better with Google and other competitors specifically because they don't mind having someone with a difference of opinion. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
I recommend a general and public return of praise and thanksgiving to him from whose goodness these blessings descend. John Jay, First Supreme Court Chief Justice.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. Think shop and buy local. Think of our local economy. Shop at our local businesses and buy from our local companies who give back to the community. Cumulus Media supports our River Region local businesses, including Frio's Gourmet Pops, Focarelli's Pizza, and Cakeaholic. So whatever your needs are, from large to small, think shop and buy local. Also, the Dragons are returning on August the 26th for the 8th annual Montgomery Dragon Boat Festival. This event is free to the public and will have live entertainment, food vendors, exhibitors, and more. Stay after the Dragon Boat races for the Gun Island Chute Stand-Up Paddleboard Race. Montgomery's first competitive stand-up paddleboard competition will start at 4 p.m. and is part of the Southern Stoke Paddle Race Circuit. Join us and cheer on athletes from across the Southeast as they paddle on our 6 and 3 mile courses. If you're interested in competing in the stand-up paddleboard race, you can visit montgomerydragonboat.org. Proceeds to benefit Bridge Builders Alabama and Rebuilding Together Central Alabama.
Wow.
Now, yeah, good stuff.
I'm working on my stand-up comedy before I do stand-up paddleboarding.
But yeah, not the same thing. I guess you could tell jokes while you're paddling.
Yeah.
I don't know. That would break my concentration. But anyway, so I wanted to get back to this Google thing, and this will probably be the last segment I spend on this. But here's the thing, because I've laid out the case. I've laid out the reasons why I think that it's a potentially very, very bad idea. But the real question is, where does this go? Because if this were just some isolated incident that maybe Google got some backlash on and they said, well, we've already terminated him now. Yeah, we probably shouldn't have done that. Maybe we should look at being a little more diverse. That would be one thing. But Google has, both from the standpoint of its employees and as a corporate, has kind of dug in their heels, said that we're not going to allow this to stand. And the reason that this is a problem is I want to ask where this goes, because keep in mind, Google is not just a fast food restaurant or a tire vendor. Google is the source where the vast majority of Americans go to get their information. If you want to know more about a subject, you Google it. You don't even search for it anymore. Google has become so ingrained as a part of our culture that it's become a verb now. You Google something. You don't search for something. And so it's almost become like Kleenex. A lot of people don't know that Kleenex is a name brand. It's not a facial tissue would be the generic term. But we've gotten so used to the name brand that we actually think that's what the thing itself is called. And that's where Google is right now. Have immense power in this country, immense influence over the population. So the question is, do they start censoring search results of people that may have beliefs that they see as fringe or hurtful, to use their own words? Because keep in mind, Google is very much on board with ideas like global warming. So anybody that would deny global warming, they may see that as a fringe or hurtful opinion. They could start saying, yeah, we're not really going to show search results from people that believe that global warming may not be as real as a lot of people say that it is. Things like traditional marriage, theology, capitalism, there's no end to where this could go. There's already been hints of it, maybe unintentional. But for example, if you look up fascism, it actually, the Google definition says it's right wing, which is incredibly disingenuous to include in the definition of fascism, considering that every time fascism has occurred, it's been big government policies that would be considered left wing. Now, you look at socialism and communism, which typically most people would agree tends to be more on the left. No mention of it being left wing. And so you're seeing little bitty nuances of that happening already in Google and the way that they do searches. We already caught them red-handed shilling for Hillary during the election. If you search for Donald Trump scandals, it would give you a long list of things. You search for Hillary Clinton scandals, it basically gave you a handful of Hillary Clinton's defenses. It was not good at bringing those up, even though it was something that was searched quite a bit. You could type in Hillary Clinton and it wouldn't give you scandals as one of your suggested fill-ins, even though it was one of their most searched for things. So we've already caught them playing favoritism when it came to politicians during the election. Also, YouTube has been caught selectively censoring or promoting certain content. For example, we covered this. The PragerU, which tends to be a more conservative-leaning video service, they do their videos on YouTube. They had one of their videos yanked under the guise of YouTube calling it hate speech. It was apparently, according to them, hate speech against Muslims for talking about some of the issues that the Muslim religion has. But the guy doing the video was a Muslim and is still a practicing Muslim today, talking about how some of the things in the Islamic faith needs to be reformed. And so they've got caught with doing this with Steven Crowder. He does a lot of videos on this, Louder with Crowder. And so they have a record of already delving in selectively placing content. Now, granted, again, as a private company, if they want to do that, they could take every right-wing site and opinion off of their search engine. Perfectly legal for them to do that if that's what they really want. But it's terrifying to think that what a lot of people view as the gateway to information in America would be willing to do that. And if that mentality that they have in deciding on this guy needs to be fired because he has a different opinion, how long is it before they start trying to do that externally and silencing other voices outside the company? I don't know that that will happen, but it's a terrifying thought. Hour two coming up.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
A new budget amendment has been proposed to keep the Department of Justice from going after states that have legalized marijuana. We get into why on Tactics.
Try your best. Try everything you can. Don't you worry what they tell themselves. If you're away, it just takes some time.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. Hour two is on, and we are stuck in the middle here today. It is hump day, halfway through the week and halfway through the show, so we're at the exact middle point right now. Glad to be with you. Glad to have you on board. This story that I was looking at the other day, I looked through the actual amendment, the wording of it. So this is probably done by the senators. This is a proposed amendment, hasn't gone through yet. I suspect that it will, that specifically prevents the Department of Justice, because they're increasing funding, they're trying to keep those funds from going to being used to go after states that are essentially violating the federal statutes on illegal substances, specifically marijuana. States like Colorado, I believe Washington and Oregon have both gone along with this, and there's a couple other states that have said, we as a state want to legalize marijuana use either in just in certain circumstances or like in Colorado, full-on recreational, as much as you want, that kind of thing. So that's essentially what they've done. This particular bill would prevent – or this – sorry, this amendment – would prevent the DOJ from using their money to go after that. So I think part of the reason for this is because this is one of Attorney General Sessions' pet issues. Known this for a long time. He's been very tough on marijuana laws, believes in the federal government cracking down on that. Now, this is one of the incredibly rare areas where Jeff Sessions and I happen to disagree. Not because I fundamentally think that he's wrong, at least on the surface, because here's the issue that you run into. A lot of times when I tell people that I'm against there being any federal substance laws because they're unconstitutional, the immediate comeback is surprise that I, as a conservative, would be against that. But it's not really an issue of whether or not I think marijuana should be legal or not. It's a matter of the Constitution doesn't allow for them to outlaw it at the federal level. Now, if the state of Alabama, the state of any state, wants to outlaw marijuana, they are well within their constitutional rights to do so. Honestly, if it came up for a vote in Alabama, I'm not sure that I would vote for it to be legalized. It's not an issue that is personally, it doesn't really personally affect me very much, so I don't really see it as a huge issue one way or the other. Whether it were legal or not, I wouldn't smoke it, so it doesn't make a huge difference to me personally. However, when it comes to the federal level, I do think that that's important because I do believe that federal laws against substances would be a violation of the 10th Amendment. If you don't believe me, look at proration. They didn't feel that a federal law at that time was strong enough that it would be unconstitutional for them to make a federal law against drinking, because the Constitution does not grant them the authority to do so, which is why they had to actually put forward a constitutional amendment, which at that point it was constitutional because, of course, they went through the proper amendment process. Now, they had to take it away afterward, which, based on the crime that it created, was a good idea. But my point in all that is, it was understood in this country for a very long time that the federal government has no authority whatsoever to impose a federal regulation on a substance because the Constitution grants them no such authority. If a state wants to do it, that's their business, but not at the federal level. And since this measure went through, this is probably a measure that I would support, but for the reasons that I just laid out, it ought not have to be that way anyway. We should get those federal laws off the books. And let's just say that we did that and all federal drug laws went away tomorrow. It would still be illegal in Alabama. It would still be illegal in the vast majority of states. I think that, if I'm remembering my math correctly, there are only three that I know for sure have gone full recreational use of marijuana. I think that there are several states that have allowed more limited measures or allowed it in limited quantities. More than that, the number is growing. So I don't remember exactly how many states have taken that measure. There's several more states that are at least considering it. But the point is, it would not be illegal in all 50 states if those federal regulations went away. It would still be illegal here. It would still be illegal in most of the Southeast. In fact, I can't think of a Southeastern state that has legalized it. But the point is, there are ways to do these things. We just have to go by the Constitution, go by the layout that was put out there, specifically in the 10th Amendment. So that's really at the bottom line. If you want to be consistent and follow the Constitution and believe in federalism, which I know that Attorney General Sessions does, I know that a lot of conservatives do, then you kind of have to believe that states have the right to set their own drug laws. The Fed doesn't have any constitutional authority to do that, especially not and impose it on other states. And so this is a measure that I would support, but it seems to me that, at least on its surface, this is a measure that should be unnecessary, that we shouldn't need to support defunding that. And, well, defunding is not really the right word. It's just saying you still have the funds, you just have to use them for other things. So it's not even really a defunding because, look, Attorney General Sessions is doing a great job. There's a lot of things that he's doing that I support. It looks like he's making a much more concerted effort to crack down on leaks, which we really need to happen. It's not a good idea to allow the president's private conversations and every single little thing that happens in the White House to get leaked to the press immediately. That's not standard protocol for the White House. I'm all for transparency. Frankly, I think that the Trump White House should be a little more transparent, but that's different in having people that are actually saboteurs of the president in the White House actively working against him. And primarily because it's also illegal. Also, think that Attorney General Sessions has done a great job on immigration. This was one of Donald Trump's big campaign promises, and thus far he's delivered. Border crossings are way down. I think that that's because there have been no legislative changes. So I think a lot of that has to do with having an attorney general that is willing to go after people that break our laws and enter our borders illegally. I think that also has a lot to do with Donald Trump's rhetoric when it comes to those things. So really good job by Jeff Sessions. This just happens to be one area I think the senators were wise in acknowledging that Attorney General Jeff Sessions, this is one of his pet issues, and he might use these funds for things that are really not a priority and the laws aren't constitutional in the first place. So I would support it. Now, when you're talking about, I want to talk to you just for a second about one of our great sponsors, Jim Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. You can check them out on the Troy Highway, and they've been in business here in Montgomery for 50 years. Incredibly good at what they do, incredibly skilled. Their mechanics are highly qualified. You can look at anything that they're doing, and you can tell that they really love what they do when they're out there working. They do a great job. Everything that I've tried to throw at them, whether it was something small like just getting an oil change or some kind of major engine repair, which I've had to have a couple times, they were able to do it, and they were able to do it really quickly and get me out of the door and do it for a fair price. So check them out today. That's Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway. All right, we'll be back. 860-1440.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Galatians 5:1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. Now, we were discussing earlier that the Senate has essentially not cut the funding, but said the funding that we're increasing, that we're giving to the DOJ, cannot be used to prosecute and go after states for allowing recreational marijuana use. So I've already kind of given my case on it, and I've done it many times in the past, so I'm not going to belabor the point. But I wanted to use this discussion as a jumping off point to discuss something that I think is really the larger idea here, which is political loyalism. I really don't think that people, and this is a common practice in our modern political climate, unfortunately, we should never alter our policy beliefs because a person we like differs from us. Because if you've been listening to me or known me for any lengthy amount of time, y'all know that I love Jeff Sessions. I've always been very proud that Alabama's senator is one of the conservative warriors in the Senate, that he had made a name for himself when it comes to immigration and other issues. Always been a huge fan of Jeff Sessions. But I'll criticize anybody when they advocate for a policy that I believe they're wrong on. And unfortunately, I've seen so many people now that are unwilling to do that. That if there's a person that we really like and they come out with a belief that is completely different from ours, we just sort of adopt it wholesale because we like the person. And unfortunately, we've seen a lot of this recently. Now, if, for example, you have somebody that politically you are very similar to, comes out and makes an intellectual point that convinces you to change your beliefs, that's a different thing entirely. Perfect example is with Mike Lee. I'm a big fan of Mike Lee, always have been. One of the things that he came out with and said on the Hillary Clinton thing about pursuing her on her charges after Donald Trump was elected is he made the case not that Hillary Clinton was innocent, because no reasonable person could look at the evidence and say that she didn't do anything wrong or that what she did was legal. So one of the things that Mike Lee brought up is he said it would set a very bad precedent if a president goes after the former president or the person that he beat in an election. And the reason that that would set a bad precedent is because then you run the risk of becoming more like Europe back in the time of the monarchy, where the new guy comes in, or like modern dictatorships, the new guy comes in, they kill off the entire family of the previous person or their political enemies, and then you have essentially people getting elected so that they can go after the people that they disagree with, and that's a bad idea, a bad precedent to set, which... Once Mike Lee said that, even though I 100% disagree with what Hillary Clinton did, and still there is a big part of me, the more justice-oriented part of me, that does think that she needs to be behind bars, it at least made me think about it and think, maybe I'm not 100% right on this. And so you have to be intellectually rigorous. So when something like that happens, an actual intellectual turning point that makes you reconsider some of your beliefs, that's all right. But we've got a lot of people in this country, unfortunately, that have become sycophants. We saw this an awful lot with Donald Trump fans on things like executive orders, trade, and spending. when President Obama was signing executive orders left and right, executive orders were the worst thing in the history of mankind. We can't have executive orders. President Obama is ignoring the Constitution. He's going around Congress. He should be impeached for that, which, honestly, yeah, I agreed. But I also don't like when other presidents use executive orders to try to go around Congress. Bush did it a couple times. So far, most of the executive orders that I've seen, and I haven't read all of them, from Trump seem to be within the confines of what an executive order is supposed to be. But if Trump comes out with an executive order trying to go around Congress, that would be wrong too. So looking at this, we have to be consistent on stuff like that. When it came to trade, people that I would have never thought would have been protectionism types all of a sudden jumped on board with Trump's policies of punishing companies for staying in the country. People that claimed to be conservatives and advocates of free market advocated for one of the least free market principles out there. And furthermore, something that has been shown time and time again throughout our history to be a really bad idea economically. You also had things like this happening with spending. The same people that were talking about how horrible Barack Obama's nearly $1 trillion stimulus package for infrastructure was, were all of a sudden cheering rapturously when Donald Trump was talking about his slightly over $1 trillion stimulus package for infrastructure. Well, it's the same thing. Just because a guy you like proposed it doesn't make it magically different. And this was an argument that I got into with many people that disagreed with me on the Trump issue. They said, well, because Trump's doing it, he's going to spend that money in the right place. I was like, well, can you name specifically the program that Trump is talking about that Barack Obama didn't support that he would be? Well, no, I can't, but he'll spend it in the right place. Well, that's putting your faith in the person, not in the policy. That's being a sycophant. Now, granted, this happens on the left all the time. The left was cheering when Barack Obama seized as much executive power as humanly possible using things like executive orders, trying to go around Congress. Now, all of a sudden that Donald Trump's in the White House, they don't like that so much anymore. That's really much more of a primary issue to them. When it comes to things like spending, they don't like the fact that Donald Trump is increasing spending on things like the military. They don't like the fact that our national debt is going up all of a sudden. And when it comes to things like states' rights, states like California saying we need to secede from the union because of what's going on with our tax dollars. Well, when other states did that, you called us racist and said that it was un-American to even suggest that. So there has to be some kind of academic consistency. Remember, if you call back to what we were talking about yesterday in the Senate elections, one of the things that I've taken great issue with the Senate Leadership Fund and Luther Strange's campaign is they're trying to take a handful of votes out of context and make Mo Brooks into being exactly the same in lockstep with Nancy Pelosi against Trump. That's the case that they're making, which is utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, that one is. There's no doubt. I've heard these ads. We were talking about
right.
attack ads yesterday, and that just turns me off. Turns me off to the person who's doing the attack ads.
It really does. And the thing is that this is, when you're looking at the substance of what we're talking about, let's go back to what we were talking about in the first segment. I imagine that I would probably vote the same way as Nancy Pelosi, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren on this one issue. Now, Nancy Pelosi doesn't get a say in it because obviously this is a Senate amendment. But what I'm saying here is, on this issue of, you know, recreational use of marijuana, we would all probably be in agreement. Well, someone could take that and say, well, see, Caleb's a socialist. No, I'm not advocating for this because I want people to smoke marijuana. I'm not advocating for it because I think that smoking marijuana is a good idea, or even that I think that it should be made legal in certain states. I just believe in the Constitution. Now, does Nancy Pelosi, would she vote this way because she believes in constitutional federalism under the 10th Amendment? No. In fact, her policies point to everything in the opposite direction. She is a big centralized government progressive. But we would support the same bill, just for completely different reasons. And so it's always important to put things in context and ask why. And frankly, it is intellectually lazy and dishonest to try to group everybody in either the good guy box or the bad guy box. Look at their individual policies and make a decision for yourself, because if there is any one person that you can point to and say, I agree with this guy on everything, you're not being, you either don't know much about the person or you're being academically lazy. And when it comes to having an informed voting populace, that's something that a republic needs to thrive. And unfortunately, I feel that we as a country are starting to drop the ball on this, because we're just joining a team, following one person, and saying, that's my guy. I could think about these things, but I'd rather just do whatever he says. It's academically lazy, and it's going to wind up hurting our country. There's a great quote by someone that I vehemently disagree with, and I'm going to kind of prove my point in even using this quote. Eleanor Roosevelt once said that small minds talk about people, average minds talk about events, but great minds discuss ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Don't much care for Eleanor Roosevelt, but that's a great quote, and she's right. Let's not be small-minded and make everything about people. Let's talk about ideas. 860-1440, we'll be right back.
And I need you more than hold you. And I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
You do well to wish to learn our arts and ways of life, and above all, the religion of Jesus Christ. These will make you a greater and happier people than you are. George Washington.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. And I did want to real quick mention that, of course, yesterday you may have noticed that we've played quite a few
Glenn Campbell.
Yes, I don't know why I got tongue-tied there. I guess I've just been talking too much. Glenn Campbell, we played several of his songs today because, of course, he passed yesterday, had Alzheimer's, had been battling it for a while, and finally he lost his battle yesterday. So certainly want to send our condolences to the Campbell family. That's a rough way to go, because you start losing yourself.
And he was so aware, he was aware of it for, what, 5 or 6?
Quite some time.
He knew that he had it before it really affected him in the classical way. I mean, he knew he had it, but, and Charlton Heston was kind of like that, too. That
Reagan, for a while.
He spent the last few years aware that he had it, but not manifesting any obvious symptoms, but still aware enough that it must have been really a pain for him and his family to go through. You know, something interesting about Glenn Campbell, that a lot of interesting things, but he was a tremendous musician. I mean, he could play classical, he could play, he backed up the Beach Boys at one time before he became famous. He was just one of these gifted musicians, and he didn't know how to read music.
I didn't know that he couldn't read music.
He didn't know how to. He grew up in, and this is the pronunciation, Delight, Arkansas. The delight of Delight, Arkansas. And they were just dirt poor. And he said that one reason that he wanted to pursue music and the guitar and all, he just didn't want to be looking at the south end of a northbound mule anymore.
Well, when it comes to Glenn Campbell, you know, my first exposure to him actually wasn't his music. Because the first time that I ever learned about who Glenn Campbell was when I was a kid, and I watched True Grit, the old version of True Grit with John Wayne. And, of course, Glenn Campbell performs the song True Grit, and he is one of the main characters in it.
Yeah,
he was a talented actor as well.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. One of my favorite I really like Big Jake, which is another John Wayne movie, but I'd say it's right up there with True Grit for my favorite John Wayne movie of all time. Love both of those movies. But anyway, really sad to see him go. The guy was a country music legend and just an incredible talent, like Joe was saying. He could sing, he could act, he could play for any kind of music you wanted.
Any kind.
Right, and just an amazing voice. But, you know.
To use the cliche, and it was a distinctive voice. Like, nobody since or before since has had a delivery just quite like that.
Yeah. You can hear covers of his songs, and you can definitely tell that it's not him because he did have that distinctive voice. I will say, though, even though I like Glenn Campbell's version better, the band Perry does a version of Gentle on My Mind, which is just phenomenal. I love the band Perry. I saw them in concert not too long ago. But I did want to bring this up. We do have one more news story that I wanted to bring to your attention, and it actually does deal with the DOJ. Yesterday, a Boston federal court charged six people with buying and selling falsified documents. And what were they used for? Voting fraud. So here's essentially what happened. There were six people, four of them were state workers. There were two other people that were dealing with the documents themselves. They used stolen Puerto Rican records to make Puerto Rican Social Security cards. The original data was sold for $900, and then they sold the Social Security cards for $2,000, because keep in mind, Puerto Rico, not a state, but it is a part of the United States, and as such, their citizens are United States citizens that get a Social Security card just like everybody else. And so what they were doing was they were selling these falsified records to people so that they could get driver's licenses and use them long-term to vote. Now, I don't know if Massachusetts is a voter ID state. I'd have to look that up, but we've talked about strong voter ID laws, which are great, and I fully support them. In this particular case, it wouldn't have done any good because they were getting legitimate government documents out of a stolen identity ring. Apparently, according to the Department of Justice, this is not an uncommon occurrence. Usually when you have voter fraud like this, they said that it's pretty common for that to come straight out of Puerto Rico. Because they aren't an official state, they're not as regulated as some other state records would be. And so because of that, it's easier to get your foot in the door and steal records from Puerto Rico, falsify documents from their records. And so according to this, and this is something that rhetorically we go back and forth on quite a bit, the left always tries to assure us that this is not why they oppose voter ID laws, that voter fraud never really happens. One thing that I noticed that was really funny in this previous election is whether or not you thought the election was rigged depend on who you were for and when you were asked. Because if you were not all Trump voters, of course, but if you were one of the Trump loyalists that believed everything he said, no matter how ridiculous it was, during the election, you were convinced that the system was rigged, that everything was working against Donald Trump, that there were people that were actively taking steps to rig the vote against him.
Oh, he said that himself.
Oh, often. It wasn't even something that he kind of said in passing in an interview. This was something that he said at virtually every rally I saw his speech at. And then it seemed like right after Election Day, it were all the Clinton people that said, no, the system was rigged. And Donald Trump's people that were trying to say, no, it was fair. Everything happened way.
I mean, Hillary, how could they complain that it was rigged? She, after all, she got more votes.
That's exactly what I said when people were complaining about the system, the system being flawed. But anyway, so it's kind of the issue of, and unfortunately politics has become all too similar to this, when you're pulling for a certain team, like in general, I try to be as objective as possible, but when I see a close call, I give the nod to Auburn or the Braves or whoever it is that's playing that game.
You're an honest man.
Well, because, you know, I can recognize that I have some inherent bias there.
I do, too. Not a game at Riverwalk goes by. Right?
Exactly.
People that I sit with, and they'll say, oh, no, it was not. I said, yeah, it was. Let's look at the replay. You know, I'm a Biscuit fan, but
yeah.
He was.
And you have to do that sometimes. You try to be honest with yourself. Okay. I don't like it, but yes, his foot was in, so technically, yes, that's a completed pass. You know, you have to do that with yourself from time to time, but I'm aware of the fact that occasionally I can look at the play, and because I am pulling for one side or the other, I probably give the benefit of the doubt to my team more than others. But this was blatant. And what they were it was so funny to me that the left was trying to convince you that there was nothing wrong, that our voter systems are fair, they're trustworthy. And then the second Hillary Clinton lost the election, oh, the whole thing was rigged against her. And the Donald Trump people were saying, no, it was fine. Now, they did say, to their credit, and this was Donald Trump, too, not just his people, they maintained that there was illegal voting going on even after he won the election. So credit where credit is due. But the left is constantly telling us that voter ID is not a problem. Here's the thing. Even one case of voting fraud is a problem, whether or not it affects the outcome of the vote. Here's why. When someone who is not supposed to be voting votes, that cancels out somebody else's vote, somebody that was supposed to be voting. And that's why, especially when it comes to elections, we have to be relentless in pursuing making sure that everything was fair, because that is instrumental to maintaining a free republic. If we lose that, we've essentially already lost the country. Now, I don't think that one case coming out of Boston where a few people were selling it is going to bring down the entire country or anything. But we do have to set an example and be tough on things like this. It is imperative that we fight against voter fraud, because it makes real voters' ballots less meaningful, have less of an impact. And if it happens on a large enough scale, that's going to be a really big problem. So we've got to be relentless in our pursuit of that. Chaplin's report coming up.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 13:34 and 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. We do have the chaplain's report up now. I wanted to give you a little background before we dive right into the scripture, because I think this context is important. Keep in mind that the period of the judges, that's the period between Joshua leading the children of Israel and the period of kings. So Israel has no king at this point, but this is after they're already in the land of Canaan. And Joshua's gone. They have judges around that are sort of filling that leadership void, that are making determinations based on God. And in a similar way of the prophets, it would be almost like if you had prophets running the country. Not exactly the same, but it's similar. So keep that in mind. And Israel is trying to drive back the Canaanites at this point. They're involved in a war. And this story comes from a judge named Deborah. And to understand a little bit about this background, they are having this fight, and God gives this prophecy to Deborah and Barak in Judges 4, verse 9. She said, "I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the honor shall not be yours on the journey that you are about to take." This is Deborah speaking. "For the Lord will sell Sisera into the hands of a woman." Now, Sisera, just so you know, is the opposing army's general. He's the commander. And so what she's saying is, "I'm going to go with you," the commander of the Israel's forces, "on this trip, on this military campaign. But just so you know ahead of time, God is going to deliver us, but the glory is not going to be on you. There's going to be a woman that God gives the glory to for this military victory." Now, isn't that interesting? Because we've been told this lie over and over and over and over again, that especially in the time of the Old Testament, but really carrying on into the New, that all Christian and Jewish doctrine is regressive, it oppresses women, it talks about them like their property, all these things. Well, it acknowledges that they're different, and it talks about them having different roles. But that's nonsense. We've got stories like this, and we're going to get into what happens in the story here in just a second. But we've got books like Esther and Ruth. There are several incredibly prominent female characters in the Bible that play a very vital role in the biblical narrative. I could go on and on with different people, you know, Abigail, we could go on and on all day, but the point is the Bible gives a very balanced view of the importance of both men and women. Now, a lot of the characters, of course, because they take leadership roles in the narratives, tend to be men. But there's a lot of godly women that God admonishes and praises for their service to him, and this is one such case. In this case, even giving a woman the credit for a military victory. Sisera, at this point, he has just come back from the battlefield. He is wearied from the battle. He's been defeated, and he escapes to go into a tent to rest. But Deborah has already essentially made other plans. So let's go to Judges 4, 18 through 21. Jael went out to meet Sisera and said to him, "Turn aside, my master, turn aside to me. Do not be afraid." And he turned aside to her in the tent, and she covered him with a rug. So he goes in there to rest. He said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty." So she opened a bottle of milk and gave him a drink. And then she covered him. And then he said to her, "Stand in the doorway of the tent, and it shall be, if anyone comes and inquires of you, and say, 'Is there anyone here?' that you shall say, 'No.'" But Jael, Heber's wife, took a tent peg and seized a hammer in her hand, and went secretly to him and drove the peg into his temple. And it went through into the ground, for he was sound asleep and exhausted, so he died. So here we have the general of the Canaanite army. The Canaanites, incredibly brutal people, involved in sacrificing children to their pagan gods, involved in all manners of immorality, exploiting the poor, slavery, you name it, they were involved in it. And they are opposing Israel, trying to come in, take territory, take the land that God has promised to them. They're involved in this battle. And so this woman, Jael, comes in and takes Sisera's life, this great opposing general of the other army. Now, one thing that really does stand out to me is that in this military victory, who the glory is given to this woman, Jael, she is not going out on the battlefield with a sword. She is not a soldier engaged in this warfare. The way that she, because she's acting as a spy here, obviously, the way that she is able to secure this military victory is by doing what you would typically think a woman would do. Now, she tricks him, obviously, but she takes him in to her house. She's a homemaker, gives him a place to rest, gives him some comfort, lures him to sleep, and then takes his life because of the crimes that he's committed and because he's on the opposing side. So even when we're talking about a military victory that God gives to a woman, she still fulfills it in a very feminine way. There is no crime nor shame in admitting that men and women are different and still equally asserting that women can do great things, sometimes things that men can't do, because there were a lot of men on the battlefield and none of them were able to kill him. But she could, because she was a woman. So acknowledging these differences and celebrating them really does make us stronger. Stay the course, friends.
Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall, for he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled.